Okay, so welcome, brothers and sisters, to this Black Wallets Matter members only meeting. This is the first one that we had for the year. And, you know, so like I said last year at our last one, we want these calls to be a little bit more meaningful and more productive than we had in the past. And so that's why we don't have them every week. But they will be on Tuesdays. And basically, we'll send it out an email or a communication when we have something to talk about, right? So we don't want to just waste your time and have you coming on. Tonight, we have Brother George. Brother George is a mental health professional, and he will help us. Like I said, everyone received the email. We will be discussing some of the cultural biases we may have against our own people. And Brother George, I guess the goal would to try to be to come to some type of resolution or at least become better aware of where we stand so that way we can all make, we can be mindful when we may have, you know, how they call it self-hate. The reason why we wanted to wait to have this on a members call is because we want everyone to first feel like family, right? So you're amongst brothers and sisters. And then we want everyone to be open and honest in their communication. As I was explaining the sister mine, Brother Dwayne, earlier, I was saying that the reason we wanted to do this on a members call is because despite what, you know, no matter what you may say or whatever opinions you may express, the fact that you're on this side of the fence, you know, part of the membership, part of the organization, you have already expressed your commitment to the improvement and betterment to our brothers and sisters, especially those people who you do not even know and, you know, or whatever, right? So your question, so your commitment to our people is not being questioned. I did the assessment as well with Brother George, and I have some unique experiences with our brothers and sisters, and I'll go into it if it warrants. But you know, the bottom line is I too have certain biases. So I don't want anyone to feel, I don't want anyone to feel like they're on the spot or anything like that. And definitely we are asking for full participation. We want to welcome Brother George, and I'll open up the floor to him now. So everyone knows you can just press star 6 to, get in the queue when he opens it up for Q&A. So just give me a second here. And okay. Brother George. Oh, wait. Nope. Sorry. That's the wrong. Okay, Brother George. You should be. What's going on here? Brother George, there you go.
All right, I'm off.
Yes, you are.
All right. Yeah, beautifully said, Brother Lou.
Okay.
Thank you for the opening. Just to start out with, I'll give just a brief intro on myself. My name is George Middleton. I reside here in Indianapolis, Indiana. My educational history is I graduated from the Indiana University School of Music, and I work primarily as a musician and instructor. That work eventually led me into the field of mental health. I know that's kind of a weird segue. But when I got into that field, I found something more passionate or as passionate as the field of music, because how the mind works is a very intriguing process for me. And the work, the populations that I serve in the mental health capacity are juveniles, families, youth. I'm contracted with the Department of Child Services, State of Indiana, so we're dealing with families that have found themselves in the system through neglect, substance abuse, and other types of issues. And as I've been doing this work, the pattern became very apparent to me that there were a certain set of stressors that fall under a certain category that a lot of members of our community fall into. And that category is racism. So it motivated me so much that I decided to write a book about it from a solutions-oriented perspective. working in the mental health field, there is not much culturally relevant representation in the profession to deal with our community. So whenever our children go into the assistance, generally they're under the subjection of another cultural perspective that even under the best of intentions cannot give them the best service. So part of my work has been, since I wrote this book, is to collaborate with as many human service organizations, clergy, educators, other mental health professionals, mentors, anybody who's working in our community. Brother Lou and I started talking, and it was apparent that over the last few conversations, a lot of the way we think has really been expressed in these conversations. So the idea came to me, and I just shared it with Lou, and so we thought we'd try this experiment to see how it would go over. So we came up with a members' engagement activity. And the purpose of it is, number one, to build our sense of organizational community inside of Black Wallets Matter. The second goal is to raise our own self-awareness of our personal biases and issues associated with doing business with each other. And then the third goal of that is to not let these biases and awarenesses that we have impede our goal of economic pooling and collaboration. So with that introduction, what I'd like to do is take some time and open up the floor for those who are willing to share their experiences and their thoughts about going through this cultural trust survey. The survey is meant for any cultural group. It's not just meant for Black. It's meant for any cultural group. So it's all about how you think about your own cultural origin. So with that, I'd like to just open it up. I don't know how you want to do this, Lou. Give each person a couple minutes at a time.
We're going to give everyone you'll have the floor. We'll do it like how we do our normal calls. Just be mindful of the people in, but, you know, you can talk to them. We have people in the queue now. So anyone who wants to get in the queue, and remember, you know, we ask for full participation. Anyone who wants to get in the queue, press *6. Hold on. And we have caller from 614 area code. Your first name, please?
Trevor.
Cool, brother Trevor. Hold on, brother.
This far. Right.
Yeah. All right, so we have – all right, there we go, Brother George. We have quite a few people in the queue, and we're going to start with Sister – Sister Maya, where did you go? Don't you run from me. Where did she go? She probably got disconnected because I don't see her. So she did say she was going around a mountain. So we have Sister Shauna first. Sister Shauna.
Good evening.
Peace.
Hi, Shauna.
All right. So your survey was pretty interesting. I wanted like an 11th option of, but I want to.
Let's hear it. What is the 11th option? Let me hear it.
But I want to. That's the 11th option. But I want to. Like it says, one is not at all and 10 is always. And so, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay, I got you. But I want
see,
to.
Like, right?
I got you.
Or an A option. You know, you got 1 through 10 and then something separate A, but I want to. Because a lot of these on here are not because, you know, I will say some of them are because I'm biased. But a lot of that what's on here is not because I'm biased, because I don't know anyone in the Black community that does it. And to be specific, like I spend 50% of my income supporting my own cultural business institution, i.e. food, entertainment, and clothing. So I am a full supporter of black businesses. If I know you, and of course you still have to be vetted, right? You can't just give the business away to anybody. But if I've vetted you and I've talked to you, I've seen some of your work, you've had referrals, then you can just bet your bottom dollar I'm going to keep coming back to you. And I think Brother Luke can pretty much testify to that.
Even if it's more expensive,
I will still come. Now, I will say that, okay, now I will give you the option to still get the business if your price is too much. And, you know, and I'm going, okay, well, it's a little bit rich for my blood. Is there a way we can work something out? Now, I will ask for a concession if I know that I'm coming to you and I can't afford you, but I want to give you the business. So I will ask, especially if it's just a solopreneur. Now, if it's a, you know, business with 5 or 6 employees, you know, I probably won't. But, so that's just my comment. Some of these things on here, I want to circle, but I want to. I need more options. I need more good options. I need more quality options, because if I could, I would, you know, support black businesses in everything. I would support my race in everything. I wish we had quality education. Like, education is huge for me. But I had to move on the other side of town just so my children can get decent education, because I don't have any power over the educational system. You know, it's just, what do I do? Do I support the black community, leave my children where they get no education, or do, you know, I move where they can get a quality education? So that's my response. I thought it was a good survey, and I liked it.
So so far you have expressed that there is a physical impediment to you supporting black business more, because you don't know who does the service, or it's geographically not in your area, correct?
That's correct. Either I don't know who the provider is, or I don't have an institution, you know, if I'm speaking specifically about academics, or I don't have the facility close enough to me where I can get to it. So, yes, the way that you described it is accurate.
Okay. And then, if any, did it make you reinforce any of the biases that you already knew, or did you learn of any biases when you went through the questioning?
Yes. Now, there was one on here that I felt some kind of way, and I had to check myself, because I almost made a statement that other people make, you know, that other races make about us when I read the question. Like, it just popped up in my head. And if I can be, you know, open and honest about it. So your question is, I view members of my own race as the best potential for intimate and healthy relationships. And so if I can be, you know, direct as possible, the first thing that popped in my head, where it depends on what Negro you're talking about. Right. So which Negro are you talking about? Are you talking about black folks, or are you talking about niggas? Because I don't really deal with niggas, but I love black folks. That's what pops in my head. I'm being honest. So you, the psychologist, I want to give you the truth. So the truth about what popped in my head was, it depends on which Negro. If the Negro, are we talking about black folks, or are we talking about niggas? Because I try to stay away from niggas. And so I realized in thinking that, okay, so that might not have been the best thing to think, but that's how I felt.
So we're going a little Chris Rock on that one.
I did. I did, brother.
And then with regard to food services, is there a particular reason why you zoned in on supporting food service businesses, or is that just because it was there?
Well, did you say food service or school?
Yeah, you said you'll support black-owned food service businesses. Did I hear you correct, or did you?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're in the black restaurant capital over here.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Have you had any bad experiences in that particular
yeah.
area, unique to our community, that would be different from other cultural restaurants?
You know what I'm about to say, right? you know what I'm about to say, so I'm going to say it.
Go ahead and let it out. Let it out, sister.
Yeah. Our customer service is piss poor.
Okay,
and
just describe
that.
Describe that.
Well,
describe your experience. Yeah.
Well, because every single, with the exception of one, and it's an older restaurant that's been around for 50 years, so the way they do things is a whole lot different. But most of the younger restaurants or newer restaurants that I go to, they don't spend any time and energy in the customer service process. It's the professionalism and the service of the customer. They just don't put the two together. It's almost like they feel like if I treat you like we're at home, you know, in the kitchen playing dominoes, and like
right,
we already
right.
know each other. If I treat you like that, then maybe you'll feel at home. And because I'm, you know, I don't want you to say, you know, good evening, ma'am. Welcome to the restaurant. How may I help you? Can we be
mm-hmm.
seated? I'm sorry. Let me help. You know, let me provide you with this. We have a little bit of delay. It's like I expect these other restaurants to give me a certain amount of respect and to
right.
treat me a certain way. And when I come here, I expect the same thing. I don't need you to act like you're my cousin because
right.
we're both black.
Right. And what, in your thinking, has allowed you to overlook that and still support? Is that a conscious effort? That did you have to like really work through that, or what made you still stay committed to those black businesses, even with the bad?
I engaged them. I engaged the owners.
Wow.
See, I don't have a problem.
Real quick, Brother George, we got quite a few people in the queue, so I just wanted to give you a heads
up. Okay. Okay. I just wanted to get
you. Got a lot of people.
Thank you. Right. Okay. Thank you, brother.
All right.
Okay.
You can finish, you know, but I just want you to be mindful because you got quite a few people who want to, you know, want to weigh in on this.
Sure. Right. And so, yes.
So you
I did.
You personally engaged the owners?
I did.
That's awesome.
I personally engaged them, personally called them, found out who they were, and most of them are either clients now or we have good relationships. I engaged them and told them how I felt. I mean, some of it helped, some of it didn't. I would just say it's a work in progress. But I engage the owners. I don't have a problem with trying to figure out who owns. It's, you know, you can tell when it's a local mom and pop kind of restaurant, so
right,
you can
right.
you know you can find out who the owner is.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, thank you, Shauna. That was really good information.
Mhm.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Next, we have Brother Dwayne. Well, actually, Brother Dwayne, you know what? Sister Mai kept jumping in and out, but all right, we'll take care of that. And then Sister Mai, you're next if you can stay in, because I know your phone's been falling in and out. Go ahead, Brother Dwayne.
Yes, sir. I'm ready to be critiqued on the survey.
Okay, that's what's up.
All right, Dwayne, what were your thoughts? What were your experiences? Share with us.
It's an interesting survey. But my background is interesting also, being from a small town, majority white. But my upbringing, being born in a black family, I'm thinking the world was black. And in our community, I was born in 1960, so we was in a segregated community. So I thought the world was black, and I grew up and loved and appreciated my people, even though we were circled by hostile neighbors and stuff in the city.
Okay.
And so I just have a natural love for our people.
Wow.
And most of the answers is like all positive. So if you want to pinpoint any one of them, I'll go ahead and share my answer.
This is awesome, man. Keep going. I mean, I really like the angle from your experience, how you see it.
Yeah.
So keep talking.
Yeah.
Talk about how natural. Yeah, give it all to me.
Yeah, so my mother, Baptist Christian. My father never, really went to church. He was he worked in the steel mills, and he is like a loan shark. So we had an interesting family. So a lot of people would come around our house. We was like a community household.
Wow.
And we held a lot of social events. He was like an entrepreneur also. We would have softball games. We would be selling goods and wares to the people. So I just grew up with an entrepreneurial mind. There was six children. I'm the third oldest. And there's three young siblings under me. But I was in that middle part where when they would have summer programs, I never got a job or anything like that in the summer program because two siblings already had jobs. So I basically had to create my own, business. So I've always been an entrepreneur.
How old were you then?
I would say I was around 9, 10, 11 years old.
And you created your own business at that age?
This was in the 60s.
Okay.
And then the 70s came in. And I remember integration when they integrated the school. I remember seeing first white girls that I had crushes on and everything. Mm-hmm. Diane Felicki, Rhonda Harrington, I still remember the name.
Remember the names.
I want to ask you a question, bro. I want to ask you a question, brother. So, and I'm sorry, and pardon for interjecting.
Go right ahead.
But I'm just curious, right, because you say you were born in the 60s. So that first question, right, I trust members of my own race over other racial and ethnic groups. So you remember a time when the trust amongst our community was implicit, right? You remember because that's
yes.
all we had, right? And then,
yes, sir.
And then you witnessed the change. Is your trust still the same? Is your trust still that strong?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would rather live in a ghetto than live with a white neighborhood.
Yeah. The question that Brother Lou asked is exactly where I wanted to go, because when you left your insulated neighborhood and went into so you said you're from where again?
Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
And where do you live now?
I was living in Pittsburgh. I'm in between Johnstown, Pennsylvania. All my children was born in Philadelphia. I have four children. The oldest is 25. The youngest is 16. They was all born in Philadelphia. I'm a military veteran. I traveled the world a little bit.
All right. So when you left.
My second language is Korean.
Oh, okay. You speak second language. Awesome. So when you left your hometown environment and got that out of state, out of country experience, did you see a difference in the black community away from home, or did you perceive it all as the same?
Let me say this here. When I moved to Philadelphia, it was a culture shock for me.
Okay.
Because when I moved to Philly, I converted to Islam a few years before, and I thought I was moving into an Islamic city. But when I got up in there, that's when I had a culture shock, seeing the hatred, the black-on-black hatred, things of that nature. It's like they didn't know who the real enemy is. That's how I looked at that city of Philadelphia.
Okay.
And so I've lived there for 13 years observing all of this strife and conflict amongst our people. And it was really a culture shock for me.
Awesome.
And I almost got robbed and everything. So I went through it with our people, but I still, you might call me naive, but I still trust our people, but you have to be aware of your environment.
But you are because of your experiences. What you're saying is, even in view of the negativity that you witness outside of your upbringing, internally you have a natural, you still have that natural love and desire of trust for your people.
Yes, because I literally get energy from being around my people. I can't be
right.
If I'm like in an all white area, I'm lacking energy.
Awesome.
I'm not getting that spiritual. I'm not getting the vitamins, the spiritual vitamins mm-hmm. that's necessary for me to exist.
Like it.
All right,
excellent.
Man.
That's excellent.
Really, really great perspective. Anything else you want to ask there, Brother Lou, before we let him go?
No. I think it's insightful. I'm noticing the cultural difference. The difference between the time. All right, so the period in which you grew up and the environment and all of that impresses upon you, you know, your outlook, because he said he grew up, it was all black, and he trusts our people implicitly, and even though when someone tried to rob him or whatever, he still trusts them. I mean, that's, like he said, man, it's in him. It's in him.
That's
an interesting perspective. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, because I don't think most of us have that.
Right.
Let me add this also.
Yeah.
Now, I went through the prison system and everything after the military. Before the military, I was a little, you know, hoodish.
Uh-huh.
But it was like more, the way I did things was I knew that white people were the enemy. They just had too much better stuff than us. They would ride by, call us niggas, locking doors, all kinds of nuances and things.
Right.
And I had a white friend, and it was the dominant black family in the neighborhood used to get on me about hanging with the white dude. They used to chase me and everything. When I was at the white guy's house, I wasn't allowed in the house. I wasn't allowed to play with certain toys, so I had that stigmatized me. So that carried, that put a wrinkle in my brain about white people and things.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was incarcerated, I started studying Islam under the Nation of Islam. So I accepted that out of the pure information that it provided. Because I'm not really a religious person, but it's the information, the love of our, it just instilled more. When I read Message to the Black Man in America, it was like somebody wrote the thoughts of my mind in the book.
Wow.
That's how I look at it. And I was just electrified standing in prison, wondering why these people from those black areas like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh wasn't seeing what I was seeing. They was like ignoring it. They used to call me Brother Righteous and all of that. They segregated me into this place, you know, time me because I start reforming myself. And the prison guards were saying like, man, what the heck? You was getting in trouble every other day. Now, what's going on with you now?
Right.
And it just basically cleaned me up. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad uses all kinds of informational technology in the teaching. So people can't just say that he's narrow-minded or anything like that, because he used Dale Carnegie's information. They called it proper handling the people, which is break down how to handle people, things of that nature. When I came out of prison, I came right into, not immediately into it, but in the nation they had the Dope Busters in Washington, D.C. Whenever they sell the final calls in black communities, where it's structured like housing development, tenant councils noticed that crime went down whenever they came around. That turned into a security firm. I'm a felon coming out of prison and things. I'm working in a security firm. Acting like the most upright police in the area. And we stopped and cutting down drugs. We was on social programs and things of that nature. Just Google it and study the history of that. But it was the Jewish community that really destroyed that our organization, because they didn't want, they was construing that Mr. Farrakhan was getting funding from them. But they really destroyed that movement, because we was the largest unarmed militia in the United States. And that put fear inside the hearts of our opponents and things of that nature in this commercial society. But anyhow, that's the foundation. And just to end the conversation on my part, a few years ago I was in Pittsburgh and I got accosted by a pizza shop owner.
Mm-hmm.
But so happened two members of an organization called Action United, which was made up of members, former members of ACORN, because that organization got destroyed too by unscrupulous people and activities of Negro them that was inside that organization. But I joined Action United, and it was a 501c4 organization, but we would build memberships. It was paid memberships. That's how we was funded and things of that nature. And that's what Black Wallet Matters. It reminds me of that type of organization.
Yeah.
But being the entrepreneur that I am, I use my community social outreach in an economic way to help build business. We vet people, find out what their situations is. We get them involved in actions dealing with clean water, social injustice, and things of that nature. But I'm always trying to get them to turn that movement into a business opportunity, because our opponents do the same thing. They're getting paid off all of those things in our community. So that's the mindset that I'm coming in with Black Wallets Matter. That's where my head's at with.
Love it, Dwayne. Thank you, brother. Love it.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, brother. All right. And now, all right, so Sister Mai seems to have a stable line. So then we have Sister Mai, we got Brother Aoife, Sister Rhonda, Brother Leonard, and Sister Bernita in the queue. Sister Mai, you are live.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi.
I enjoy taking the survey and the questions, and I unfortunately, like Brother Lou said, I was dropping the call a lot, but I think from what I was able to hear, the first sister that was speaking actually said had a lot of my same sentiments. But basically, my results are I did a sum average and it's 8.25.
Okay. No.
Can we say
but listen, I did the same too. But go
ahead.
But go ahead.
So the only ones that I scored really low on is the academic education, because I didn't have an option, basically, to go to college, being in California after high school. But for the most part, everything else, you know, it's pretty up there. I will go out of my way to support Black businesses. If I have a bad experience, I'll go back. Like your sister said, I'll also engage, you know, the owners when it warrants it. But I also do it, and I do it more so when I want to engage them about something positive about their business and what's going on. I do have a different perspective in terms of the customer service because of my personal experience with Southern Cafe. And that is, they actually have, it's a Black-owned restaurant, and it's one of two, one in Oakland, one is in Antioch. And they have excellent customer service, and that is the main thing that they focus on at the Antioch location in particular. When you first walk in, you're greeted by, welcome to Southern Cafe, whoever, you know, here, door, and they're just very kind, they're smiling, they really want to be, they're attentive to you, they're trained well in that restaurant. So I think we are, I personally have examples of where we're getting better. There's another one in Oakland that has really good customer service. And the only one that I questioned myself on, and it's really after the last caller mentioned trust, I put a 9. But then when he mentioned he'd rather live in the ghetto than live in an all-white community, I had to think about that and say, maybe I don't trust this as much as I think, because I don't have that same sentiment about wanting to live in the ghetto.
So let's dig down into that. What are your thoughts about your trust issues? What trust issues would you have about living in that environment?
Okay, so I actually grew up in the ghetto. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, and didn't know it was a ghetto because that's all I knew at the time. But our house, we were our house was broken into several times, and we moved several times, and it's still broken into several times. And so when my mother got married to my stepfather, we moved into a different, like the outskirts of St. Louis, and then they bought a home in a well-integrated, but I'd say probably more like 60% white, 40% black community, and it felt safer. Our house was never broken into. We didn't have the same, you know, issues. So then when we moved to California, and from then on, basically, we lived in suburbia-type, you know, neighborhoods. And when I bought my first and second and third, you know, all my homes have been in non-black communities. And it really, I guess, has been just because of that experience, you know, stigma. And even now, and it's so, everything is so systemic, right? Like, I feel like I trust us in terms of doing business with us and having good service and good quality and that kind of thing. So I support black, patronize black owned businesses. When it comes to living around us, it really just depends. I mean, I would love to. And actually, when I first bought my first house in Antioch, that community was probably 50% black. And I loved it because it was a lot of us, but we were all like-minded. And I think that's the thing. It's sort of like, this is where I feel like race doesn't necessarily play a part when it comes to where your values, where you live and what you're trying to achieve with your life. So, like, if you're the type of person that just wants a good and safe environment, you want your kids to go to good schools, so-called good schools, but in schools where there's not a lot of gang violence and drugs and all that kind of stuff going on in the school system, where there's a lot of parental and bias and involvement in the school system, like I was, parents that are two-family, you know, two-parent homes, families, the parents just, you know, seem to be progressive, I'll just say middle class or whatever. If there were communities like that all over, I would love to, and they were all black, I mean, like Black Wall Street, you know, used to be, right. I would love that, right? If it was all of us and we were all like-minded, but that just hasn't been my reality. I haven't found that. If I did, I would love to live there, but so... That's where I am with that.
You're an 8.25, and you're pretty much positive, except with some hesitancy in the area of trust, to the point where either consciously or unconsciously, you have tended to live in communities that don't necessarily look like you. Correct.
Right, right. And a part of that, when I mentioned in the beginning, when I started to talk about that part, and I said it's systemic, you know, we're judged by our zip code. Our insurance rates are so much higher on our mortgage insurance and our auto insurance based on our zip code. You know, so that's another reason I don't. Yeah.
That's why you pick.
As well as
yours.
Hold on. Go ahead.
That's why you pick. Places, but just because you factored that into your economic structure, correct?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But also the school, you know, the API index. That was really the main, you know, thing once I had my child. Like that's what I focused on. However, I did send her. She is in an all-black college. So she grew up in an all-white neighborhood, but she's at Langston University in Oklahoma.
What made her, whose decision, or whose idea was that for her to go to an all-black college?
The scholarship, first and foremost, to be honest. But I actually had always talked to her about going to a black college, and I always wanted her to go to one. Because she could, like she had the opportunity when I didn't. And she was approached by other colleges as well for scholarships. But once she started sort of pushing back, because that wasn't her environment. She's never been around all black people except for when I take her home, which I did as much as I could to St. Louis. But she was really hesitant to go to an all black college. But I felt like she really needed it because I got it. I felt like I got the cultural experience and awareness and the love for my people because I grew up in it as a child, right? And but she's never had that experience, and I felt like she really missed out and really needed that. So I was pushing for years, you know, trying to get her interested in Black colleges, and she wasn't. And then when I realized when she got became of the age where she was just, like, going to do what I didn't want her to do sort of thing, then I stopped, I backed off. Like, okay, I'm not going to push that or mention that anymore at all about going to Black college. So when she started getting recruited, she's an athlete. So fortunately, the Black coach that was talking to her really appealed to her and really, you know, she just really felt comfortable. And we all felt more comfortable with him than any other college recruiter. And there were actually two other Black ones. They weren't Black from Black colleges, but they were Black recruiters. But she felt really, really comfortable with him, and they did offer, you know, the most full ride. So
when the Black colleges approached you, you had no issues of trust or bias or anything. You were perfectly comfortable with that concept, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I was ecstatic, actually. I really was happy. I wanted her to go there. I felt like she's more safe there than she would be in any other college.
Gotcha. Brother Lou, any perspectives that you want to focus in on?
No.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Really good information. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Next we have...
We're going to get results.
We're going to get a combination of everybody's perspectives, and then we'll kind of bring it home.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Brother Ifa, you are live, brother.
Greetings, everyone. If you want to cut me off or kick me off the call for coming in late, I understand because I didn't get a chance to take the survey. But I've been listening and found everything enlightening with your previous respondents. I want to talk about language.
Wait, brother. We're not going to. Is this pertaining to what he's talking about, or is this a different topic? Because if this is a different topic, then you can get back in the queue. And
I guess I can come back on the queue because I didn't take the survey, but
You have the survey in front of you?
No, I don't.
And then you don't check yet. I mean, so it's not
a different topic, but I don't have the survey, so I'll concede and just step out. But I do have a response related to what everybody talking about.
Give me your 30-second pitch about the language thing you were going to say.
30-second pitch is pretty much. I think we need to change the language in terms of all across the board. We need it fashionable, and our language needs to reflect that we have confidence in each other. I think this self-hate diatribe or whatever has become a fashion statement that we've internalized, and as a result of it, it's slowing down the progress of our economic and social growth. So, and I've seen evidence on this with on social media, but also not just social media, but to me, that's a clear indication on positive and negative, where we could go to progress,
right,
as well as where we are. I think that once we change our language and in the process of changing our language away from this self-hate fashion statement to one of confidence and progress, Black progress and revitalization, then you'll see some overall changes, economic and social.
I like that. So keep that in mind if you get a minute, go to the survey. Keep that in mind what you say, because it's very appropriate. Go through the survey, and then when you get a chance, come back.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Yeah, Brother Ifa, just check the email that I sent you about the notification for this. So I sent out you probably 2-3, depending on which way you felt.
Is there an attachment on the survey?
It says download. It says download, and it basically goes through some of the things that we're talking about. Well, actually, you'll understand because the language in the actual survey is not, you know, divisive or anything. It's just stating things matter-of-factly, and then this is what we're discussing here. So, you know, it'll give you a little bit of context because it's not just about that. Right. So there's other questions in terms of, like, you know, I'm very knowledgeable on my culture's historic achievements to my country's growth and things like that. So there's a bunch of the different questions. What we're doing is we're asking in aggregate what's the overall sentiment. You understand what I'm saying? All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, brother.
Yep, no problem. Okay, Sister Rhonda, you are live, sister.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Where should I start? Should I just give you my experience first? Because
yes,
I can give you an experience. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I don't think I have biases, and I say that because of my upbringing. But I feel because of when I lived in different states and whatever, I have to have room for growth for myself to understand. Everybody didn't have the same upbringing that I did.
Okay.
I say that to say we were taught to be better, but not better than.
Okay.
Coming up, my grandfather was Panamanian. My grandmother was from Jamaica. My grandmother experienced Rosewood. So I had a kind of diverse background in that. Yeah, my grandparents, yes, and my uncles and my aunt, they grew up and married out of the race too. My aunt, she married in Puerto Rico. One of my uncles married a Japanese lady. So we kind of like different things coming up in our household. And it was like the norm for me. The only thing that I questioned was when we were in school, in elementary school, and I didn't know it then, but I knew that we were an experiment, and this was after the fact. When I got grown, I really realized that we were an experiment, and I didn't understand it then. Understood it when I became adult. We were shipped out to an all-white school, and I'm a New Yorker. I'm from the Bronx, and we were shipped out to Queens. And I was like, okay, I could hold my own against the white students. It wasn't nothing of that nature. The thing was that we had to pick up, the bus driver had to pick up kids from Harlem and the Bronx and Harlem. So we were, the kids in Harlem, some kids, they would fight amongst each other, kids in the Bronx and kids from Harlem, they would fight. And I was like, why are they fighting each other? I just didn't understand that until I got, like I said, an adult, and I moved out of state, and I just didn't understand. But the point I was really upset about at that point, and I must have been like 10 years old, I was like, I didn't mind going to that white school, but the thing was, we had everybody. We had all the cultures in my neighborhood. We had Hispanic, we had white, we had black. Of course, we had Jamaican, we had Dominican. We had different cultures. So why didn't they come to our neighborhood? Our schools wasn't broke. We had excellent teachers, you know, different kind. I had black teachers, German teachers, white teachers, Hispanic teachers. So I just never figured out why we always had to go over there. But I figured it out when I became an adult and I saw systemically that white supremacy controls the world because that was what we was exposed to coming up the world. When you're, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say different. It's kind of, I think it's kind of weird when I look at it, because when you're exposed to, like, everything and you're around people that aren't, you tend to have to back up and really dig deep in your soul and your spirit, and you have to say, now, these people aren't where you at.
Right,
so you
right.
have to be accepted. You have to accept where they're at. You have to reach them where they're at. But no.
Yeah, you have to start where they are.
Right.
So are you realistically saying, when you make that adjustment, when you have to find yourself adapting, or you know, because I mean, essentially what you're saying is, because you've had so many different experiences, because you've had so many different cultural experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then so I'm assuming this is you when you move someplace else, and they haven't been exposed to the things that you have, and then you find, you know, you need to, I guess, make certain adjustments in order to reach them at the level that they're on or whatever it is. Are you saying truthfully that you don't feel in your mind that you have formed any biases?
No, I haven't formed any biases. I just didn't like what they did. And I don't think that's a bias. I don't, because
so,
my
so.
Thing is, like, if I am accepting of what you do, I'm thinking that you should reciprocate. That was my thinking. I know that that's not, everybody doesn't do that, is what I'm saying. I know everybody's not there. Because
okay, so,
my next door neighbor, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So let me ask you, let's take one of the questions.
Okay.
Do you spend at least 50% of your income supporting businesses in your own community? How did you score on that?
I put a 7, because I do.
Okay.
I do.
All right. And so that's like from food to
food, clothing.
Oh,
right.
Okay. Awesome.
Right.
And
I
then,
do, because I support that. I do.
And so you score highly in your feeling that you receive better quality services as well, correct?
No, I don't. I scored. That's what I wanted to say. It was
okay.
Midway. Number
tell
5.
About
I
that.
Got
tell,
5.
Tell,
okay.
Tell me your experiences about that.
Okay. I you know, when I lived in another area and another state, I found out that everybody doesn't do things the way you're accustomed to.
Yeah.
And when you don't, I really can't tell you about this experience because it's not too cool. But anyway, when you don't wash your hands after using the bathroom and you go and you handle food, that's not where I'm at. So I just don't know. No, I'm not with that. I'm not with that. There you go. So that is when I have to teach you to do that, because it was at a point that I have to work in a fast food joint in this other state. I had administrative background, but until I could break myself into that area and get some other skills for that area, I worked at a fast food restaurant, and I saw
right.
some things that our people did that was unorthodox, and I had to pull their collar. I said, no, why would you? I said, because if my grandmother came through here and you giving
right.
her that, like, that's unhealthy. And they looked at me. They were serious. They was like, oh, well, we do this all the time. I said, no, not with me. You're not going to do this because this is not good. It's not healthy. But I had to accept their explanation until I taught them, or showed
right.
them, I should say, that it's a health risk here.
Right.
See,
and
they had
involved.
No conception of the health risk.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's a great example. What about the next question? I take financial management and investment direction from a member or members of my own race. How did you score on that?
I scored 6. Because
okay,
I've
so
seen you. Some of the things that I've seen, some of the things that we've done, and that too, we need growth in. I think somebody, I don't know if somebody mentioned one of the. I was reading. I was going into something. Somebody sent me something, and a national group that I really don't I used to give to, faithfully. I used to give to this black group. But I saw where your mission was to further the people that you wanted to further. And my thing was, okay, you can do that, but what about these people over here? I'm giving you my money not for just you and your people, your further your people. We're talking about a community of single women and children. And I made that plain in the beginning, but when I found out you wasn't gonna do that, I withdrew. I'm not gonna affiliate myself with you like that. And
so in general, when it comes to money relationships in our community, what is your gut level reaction when you think about money and black folks in our community?
Well, management, you're saying?
Just the relationship when you think about, okay, I'm gonna deal with my money. I'm gonna deal with members of my community in some type of financial project or investment or anything that requires an exchange of money. What is your internal feeling on that?
I have to be. I'm weary. Okay, I'm weary because I've seen things that we do as a people, as a group, and it may not be deliberate. It may be because you're still doing the same thing that you're not changing. You're just doing the same thing that doesn't, you keep going this cycle and nothing's changing. And then you say, well, I don't know why this isn't working. Well, you haven't changed. You've got to look at the bigger picture and do something else. I just can't keep taking people money. I can't take your money, Mr. Middleton, and say, okay, I'm going to take it, Mr. Middleton. I'm going to spend it in this school. And every last person that comes out of that school is a dropout. You better look at me and say, well, what's happening here?
What you doing with it? Yeah, what are you doing with my money?
Exactly. And that's only a fair thing, to do.
Okay.
All right. So we got a few more people in the queue. Sister Rhonda, I want to thank you. You and I, we spoke a little bit earlier about that. I think you're holding out on us, sister. I ask you to be open and honest.
I'm trying to, but I can't get in there. I'll be till next year. I'll be till next year.
All right, sister. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, cool. So we got Brother Leonard, then we got Sister Bernita, and then we got Brother Vaughn, Sister Karen, and Sister Maya is in the queue again. Go ahead, Brother Leonard.
All right. How's everybody?
Good. All right. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I really like this survey, and I have a number of things to talk about on some of the questions, but I'll follow your lead. But before we get started, I want to just kind of recite Dr. Claude Anderson. I think that's genius.
Can modern
black America do what 18 previous generations failed to do or were not allowed to? It will require black Americans to make a drastic behavior changes. And I just think that's genius. And what you're doing, I think, is genius because this is almost borderline. And I'm sure you talked about it already, Lou, but this is almost borderline therapy counsel that you're doing just by us taking this survey.
Okay. Right. I appreciate that.
This is excellent. So do I trust my race? I'll say yes, and this is why I do. My profession is restaurants, and that's what I've done. I've worked for just about everybody. But when I first started in this industry, I worked for a black-owned restaurant chain. So we had all of L.A., wrapped up. So there was about 8 restaurants, and our sales were equal to McDonald's at that time, and I'm talking 1969, 1970, all the way up to 1977.
Wow.
So when you see your clientele is all African-American, and as a kid, and this is just like a joke, but as a kid, the elders would tell me Mother's Day comes twice a month. And I said, no, Mother's Day come in May. But they were fooling with me because I was naive. And I didn't know what they were talking about till first and the 15th came, and our sales would just skyrocket that whole weekend.
Wow.
So for me, I do trust because as a kid, I was 20 years old in that industry while I was going to college. Do I spend 50%? I try to spend as much as I can. There's a grocery, black-owned grocery franchise out here called Grocery Outlet. And many of the times when I need things for the restaurant, I will travel past all the other stores to give that business my money. Now, one of the other people mentioned earlier that it's hard to because many of us don't have black businesses in our community. Mm-hmm. But to answer to that is because we don't support. And I'm going to go into, because I've worked for Olive Garden, Macaroni Grill, Cheesecake Factory, McDonald's, Taco Bell, I'm telling you this to let you know that I have experience and I'm generally a training manager. And what I mean is I'm training managers for the company. So I want to give you that, okay, so you understand where I'm coming from.
Yes, I do.
So,
yes, I do.
So when people say, I really try to support black business and I don't get the great service from black business, this is where the self-hate comes in. But because of this survey, we can help with the healing and thinking. And I say this to say this. When I work for Macaroni Grill or Olive Garden, the guest comes to me and they say they tell me what the problem is. The food's cold or I had bad service. They don't call the next day and say, hey, look, you know you're a white organization. And you know as well as I know white is right. So I want to know why I got substandard service. We're the only ones that talk about when you support black, the first thing out of your mouth is, I try to support black. We don't need to hear that. We don't need to hear that. We already know it's black. But because you're coming across that way, that's already telling me where you're at. And they hold us to the higher standard. They always hold us to a higher standard. But don't get me wrong, we're still growing as a race of people. Okay?
Right.
And these are the things that I see. I do focus on customer service, as Mai said, and I want to touch on something else as far as the business is concerned. When we first started, we would get the really educated black kids that are going to college, they're trying to do something else for themselves. But I also hire people that may not get an opportunity anyplace else because they're still my people. And they're the future. So I work hard, but sometimes they may miss the mark. I don't give the excuse as this person is not that sharp. I just try to take care of the problem and move forward. So I just want to touch on that in that business. Receive better service from members of my own race. I gave it a 5 because, again, it goes right back to how many businesses do we really have in the community? So it's hard to say whether or not you do. But I do understand when people say, when it comes to us, we're kind of shady a little bit with the service. But a lot of times that's only because maybe the skill set wasn't there for them or they weren't, I won't say properly trained, but there's a dynamic that's missing there. And we have to continue to work with our people as we are doing because this is something that's systemic among us. You can't have $1.3 billion buy-in power and the money only stays in our community 6 hours. That has nothing to do with the white man and any other culture.
There you go.
That has to do with us, okay? Take financial management investment directions. I do that. My wife is always constantly trying to get us focused, and the groups that we're affiliated with are African-American groups. Do I feel the members of my race have the best potential for intimate and healthy relationships? Yes. And the reason for that is you know you black, I know you black. There's no way that you can't say professionally, any of us on this call, if we work for white America, you're either one or two of the blacks that are working in that company, or sometimes you're the only one. And having said that, you have to work 2 times harder. You have to hold yourself to a higher standard than the other cultures. So, yes, I do feel that way. As far as the children getting the education, let me see, educational, cultural, no, they just go to regular schools. But I make sure that they understand culturally because I talk about it a lot to the point where sometimes my son doesn't want to hear it, but he's going to hear it anyway. He's going to hear it anyway. Because at the end of the day, it's no different when, like you were talking, Lou, as we mentioned before, we came up during the 60s. We didn't have an option. I mean, let me tell you what my father said to me at an early age. He said, whenever you get in a position that you open doors for your own people, that's what you do. Other cultures do it, and you had better do it. And I was only 12 and 13 years old. So a lot of times when the father and the parents are working together, these are the things that you get coming up. So, but at this point, I'm at a point now where I can ask you questions if you want to ask me any other questions.
I think, man, you covered it so very well, and there's you presented a lot of good nuggets of knowledge here in your experience. That when we start to do the summary, I'm going to use a lot of what you stated. Brother Lou, you got any perspectives on what he said?
No, actually, I love the way that he went through that, and I'm going to ask that everyone else try to do the same thing that the brother did, because we have about 45 minutes. I mean, I don't want this to go too late. So, have your survey, have your questions, you know, run through them, share with us openly and honestly, so we can get to, and, you know, if you have a little anecdote, a little experience pertaining to one of the questions, then, you know, by all means, you know, share. But because we got, there's a lot of people still in the queue, and we have about 40 minutes left on this call. So thank you, Brother Leonard, for sharing. I want to give everyone else who didn't get a chance, you know. We got a live one tonight, man. I appreciate everyone coming on and being really active and really open. So we have Sister Bernita, we got Brother Vaughn, Sister Karen, Brother Leon, Brother Nathan, Sister Donna, and then we'll have Sister Mai. Sister Bernita.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi there. How are you?
Good evening. Hi. I just wanted to just touch on a couple of them real quick. Just like the other sisters had mentioned, I probably scored the lowest or rated the lowest on the education question, only because, you know, my child now, he does attend a private, predominantly white school. But like the previous caller mentioned, you know, I try to make sure that, you know, I educate him on, you know, a lot of things that he's not going to get in school. As far as my experience, I grew up kind of all over the board where, you know, I grew up in the hood. However, I went to a predominantly white school in high school and then went to a HBCU college. So, you know, I've kind of had experiences all over the board with that. And, you know, I kind of see the benefits in both because, well, now I'm, you know, I want my child to have, you know, a better education. So I put him, you know, in a different school, which happens to be predominantly white. However, you know, I make sure that he knows, you know, what's going on, and I make sure that I teach him what I need for him to know too. Far as the other question, I was kind of in the middle on most of them. But where my biases, what I found that, you know, where my biases are is with the trust issue and being able to, you know, utilize black businesses and trust black businesses. And I think a lot of my biases comes from more so experience than anything. I'm a big supporter, or I try to support, you know, black businesses whenever and wherever I can. But unfortunately, a lot of the experience, I'm not going to say all, but a lot of the experiences that I've encountered, you know, have been, just like other callers have mentioned, you know, poor customer service, just different issues here and there. So that's something personally that I'm trying to work on. I'm going to continue to support black businesses only because I believe in that. But, you know, a lot of my experiences have not been the best with that. So I have developed some biases over time with that. But I do still, you know, I haven't let that deter me at this point from supporting because I believe in it. I've kind of fell in the middle with a lot of the questions. That's all I really wanted to touch on.
That's very honest. We appreciate that. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Sister Bernita. All right.
No,
and then next we have Brother Vaughn. Brother Vaughn.
How everybody doing?
Yes, hey, brother. What's going on? All right.
How's going on? Everybody doing?
All right.
I appreciate this survey because it makes you think, especially dealing with, you know, our people at this type of time and
yes.
Growing up, I grew up all over Cincinnati, basically, but kind of got most of my time in a small suburban neighborhood, which is basically all black. And historically, the first all black neighborhood, like kind of like in America, and it's known like Nigga Heights. And it's like, like the first question being, I trust my members of my own race over other racial ethnic groups. And it's like, I smile reading that question because it's knowing how it is in the hood right now, knowing how the younger races are right now. Like, a person would look at that and be like, no way. Mm-hmm. But me, like, I've seen the other side as well. So it's like, yeah, I do. Like, I'm a 10 at that point because of my experiences. You know,
experience.
I know people think things are greener, grass is greener on the other side, but you gotta get to that other side and step on that grass and see why it's green. You know what I mean? So I just my experiences and spend at least 50% of my income. I try my best. I go out of my way to go to black owned food places as far as entertainment. I try to do as much as I can. But there's a thing of quality, you know, and I've heard everybody like touch on service, and you know, you don't want to go into an establishment and it be hood. Like she said, don't treat me like you my cousin. And, you know, when I come to this establishment, treat me like I'm a customer and, you know, be respectable so I can show you respect back. Like, act like you had a job, act like this is an establishment and not, I just walk down on you on the block or something. Like, that's.
Has that been in general your experiences? In terms of, have you been receiving that level of quality, or have you been shorted of that quality?
I would say shorted, because regardless, I'm still going to that establishment.
Right.
Like that's not gonna stop me from going in there because it's where I'm from. So when I see it, it's like I kind of shake my head and, you know, I might say something like here and there, depending on if I could talk to the person, because, you know, that can go totally the wrong way. Just trying to talk to the wrong person at the wrong time. And like, you know, it won't deter me. It ain't going to stop me from going. So, yeah, I would say I'm shorted because, you know, I'm still going. Like, I don't, it's, it's in me. It's just I'm full of it. I'm full of us.
You're committed.
So,
you're committed. Okay.
Right. And that goes to the next question as far as better quality service, you know, from the members of my own race. And it depends. It depends. Like, I know where I can get good quality service, you know, but like where I'm from, like here, like you look another black person in the eyes while y'all walking down the street and y'all catch eye contact for the whole block, walk past and don't even speak. You know what I mean? So it's like we like that, and it's like, wow. You know what I mean? And if you do speak, it's like you got a problem with them or something. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Nah, not what's up. I ain't trying to, this ain't a gang thing. I'm, how you doing? So, you know, you gotta be careful. You gotta be careful. Financial management and investment directions from members of my own race, I score real low there because my experience, and I'll say this is from my experience, for the most part, when people of my own race get to a financial point to where I feel like they should be giving back, and not saying to come out their pocket and get some money back, but, you know, knowledge, experience, you know, guidance, a push, a hand, they usually lead the neighborhood and really don't come around no more. You know, it's like they too good for where they came from now because they got some money. And I see that more often than I do people that, you know, get to that point to where they can give back because of, you know, just management. Just show me some direction and they'll run away. It's very few that do come back and give that direction back to the hood, and that's why the hood stays where it is, because they get it and leave. As far as relationships, I don't see nothing outside of my race, so that's a 10. Education, I hate it because we don't have it, and it's not taught for us. It's not given to us as a people. The truth is not told and all that. So, yeah, I teach my kids on my own as much as I can, them, their friends. Like, I let it be known. So with that, it's like it's not the academic educational system, but I give them what they need to know, so when they hear what they get in that school, they know it's more to it than just that. They study further into things, and they don't just go for what's in that school book. You know, they go to the library, and, you know, we got DVDs, and we you know, follow our culture as much as I can give to them from what I can get. And that kind of answered the second question, too. And I believe I'm very knowledgeable about the historic achievements of my culture to my country and country's growth. My goodness, my studying has basically went to that for a long time to see and know like all of our accomplishments as a people. And it's like one of the sisters was saying, a problem we have is it's too much negativity. We gotta spread positivity around so people start asking positive questions and not always see and think in a negative nature. Because if all they see and hear is negativity, they indulge and dive into it. If we can start putting and spreading positivity around on a regular basis so that people will start seeing it and we can start doing it, because once you start seeing it, once you start speaking upon it, people start living it, and we can start doing more things and have a conversation with more than just us that's our of like his. It's those other ones who we can grab and bring along too.
Oh, all right, good brother. We still got a few people in the queue. I want to thank you for weighing in on the question.
That was really good.
And I really appreciate you saying that you take the time to educate your kids based on what you know, instead of telling them directly that what they're learning in the book is wrong, telling them that there's more to it. That's excellent. Right. I'm glad you're doing that, brother. So we're gonna give got Sister Karen. Sister Karen.
Good evening.
Peace. Good evening. How are you?
Okay. I rated 79 on question one. I was a 10.
All right.
I have full trust. The only thing I wouldn't do, I don't think I would want to live in a predominantly black neighborhood, and it's not because of black people. It's because I think the dominant culture may do something to the community, something like Flint, Michigan, you know, poison the water or something like that, if there were a group of successful black people living together.
So tell me more about that. You mean you feel like there's a conspiracy or an effort
Yeah, not so much a conspiracy, just things that have happened in history, you know. Growing up in segregation, you didn't get the best water. You didn't get the best facilities. And it wasn't because of black people not trusting black people. It was the dominant society. You know, that's that part of town. You know?
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's the way I feel about that.
And your earlier experiences growing up were all black, pro-black. You had good, positive black experiences.
I pretty much have a positive about black people. But I grew up in San Francisco, and I think this was the first place that got gentrified, and we're like down to maybe 5% black people now,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to when I was growing up here. I grew up in the early 60s, so there was a lot of the Black Panthers were in Oakland. They were here in San Francisco. So there were a lot of things happening in the Bay Area.
All right, and you experienced the season of the Panthers?
Well, I was a kid. I was in tune with it, you know, kind of, yeah.
Okay.
So I have more of a positive perspective
mm-hmm.
than I guess maybe my children today.
Gotcha.
Spending the next question, I scored a 5 for the simple fact it's very hard to find black businesses here in the Bay Area. Most of the businesses, especially where I live, are Asian and mostly Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to spend money, at least go to restaurants, and I usually have to go over to Oakland. Clothing, I really don't know of any clothing stores. Services, yes, I try to use a black CPA for taxes and things like that. But,
question, sister, are you close to Antioch? Are you close to there where Sister Ma and Brother Leonard are?
Antioch's like, depending on the time of day, it's maybe an hour, 45 minutes to an hour away.
Because they have the Southern Cafe. Brother Leonard just gave me a bunch of flyers.
I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, okay.
I do go to black restaurants. There are like a few, 2 or 3 in San Francisco, and I've been to a couple in Oakland.
Okay, I just wanted to know. All right, so you're on that side of town. I just wanted to let you know.
Okay.
All right. Got it.
You would say that you've had generally positive experiences when you support black business.
Yeah, I've had very positive experiences.
Okay.
In fact, I think I receive better quality services from black businesses because most of the business out here are Asians and Chinese people. Their culture, they're very rude.
Uh-huh.
That's just their culture. They're rude, period, to each other.
Yeah, they are.
It's just a rude type of culture. So my experience, when I go out and I go to black businesses, it's been positive.
Okay.
It's been very positive. Would I take financial management and investment? Yes. My family, when I was younger, they set up a credit union. So we were taught to save our money, and then we were able to borrow against our money also.
So, your family set up a natural credit union.
Yeah, my uncle organized it, and all my mom's brothers and sisters, we were all members, and then it taught us to save money. We would put money in there. Each child, I think they put $50 or $100 when you were born into the credit union for you, and then we could borrow against that credit union. We could go in. I mean, not like we can buy a house or anything.
Right.
Like, you know, like $500 if you're going on a vacation or something like that.
Also,
I was in an investment group, and it was, I would say, we were 90% black, and we were called babes here in the Bay Area. And those sisters were heavy. They knew how to invest stocks. They worked for B of A. So I learned a lot from them about how to buy stocks.
Is that investment group still together?
I think it is. I'm no longer in it, but I think it's still going on.
Okay, I'm not trying to be rude. We got to kind of like steam through the question. Now, I'm just going to give you a heads up because we still have people in the queue who haven't had a chance to speak at all tonight. So we want to get them a chance. All right. Okay, guys.
Okay. Well, I think I've finished now.
Oh, okay. You can finish. You can finish with the questions. I just, you can give your feedback. I just want to. So you have the financial. So, viewing the members of your race for potential intimate and healthy relationships, how did you score that?
I scored that a 10.
Okay. How about the academic education from your own cultural institution?
I scored that a 5.
Okay.
Because the schools out here are all white, but I did go to a Spelman, and my son
was excellent.
So I scored that a 5.
And how about your children?
My son is going to a HBCU, Clark Atlanta, and my daughter chose to go to a predominantly black high school in San Francisco. So I gave it a 5. Maybe I could have gave it higher.
Definitely higher, because, you're actually going out of your way to do these things.
Okay.
And then in terms of you being knowledgeable about the culture's impact on the growth of the country, obviously you're aware of that, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, sister. So now we have, we have Brother Nathan, Brother Leon, and Sister Donna, and then Sister Maya, if we can have some time, because the brother has to come arrive. Guys, Brother Nathan.
Good evening, everybody.
Peace.
Good evening, brother. Have to say that I was a little surprised with myself with this survey. I'm kind of scoring a little
How
low.
So?
Well, just scoring a little low on a few of those questions. I feel like, especially recently, I've been more aggressive in, I guess, with learning more of my culture and my history and educating my family and my children and my friends with that. But I feel that, I know that my past experiences, for instance, with your second question, with supporting our people's businesses. I had a business before I moved here to Houston, Texas, and most of my customer base was our people. And one of the biggest issues that I ran into was that with the line of work and the business I had, our people just didn't have the money for my business. So that meant that I was always cutting my prices,
right.
Having to work with what they had and it ended up in the long run really just hurting me.
Right.
And to the point where, you know, I couldn't keep the business anymore. So I would say probably left more like a bad taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
My attitude has changed about that. I want to start up a similar business again here in this city since I've moved here. But I guess, like, on your question, the only one that I scored highly on was about potential relationships.
Okay.
Where I put a 9. It might be just for me, maybe a little bit of a mental block, or like I said, just because of past experiences that I have, that it's kind of put me in a situation where I scored lowly on some of these questions. But I know it's
okay.
For me, kind of it's a work in progress. I'm doing my best, like, for my children. I want to support more businesses, black businesses in our area that we can have. I'm kind of with the educational system. My children go to more of a diverse school. I'm doing my best to kind of educate them on our culture here from home, because they won't receive it at the school that they go
right.
to. I guess that was basically it, but I'm really thankful and appreciated this survey. It just was kind of a little eye-opening.
And I really appreciate your willingness to share your experience. I could really feel your emotion and almost a sort of pain in acknowledging some of the realities of doing business in our community. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Brother Nathan. And next we got Sister Donna. Then we have Brother Leon and then Sister Mai. If we have time, because I know you want to summarize,
Hello.
Right, Brother? Yes, Sister
Hello.
Donna, how are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Donna.
Yes.
Oh, hey, how are you? Okay, good. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I'm going to be brutally honest. As far as bias to my people, I'm always brutally honest. Lou can tell you that. As far as being biased to my people, I'm biased to anybody that's not measuring up to the standards of which I live.
Okay.
That's the first thing. I don't break it down to color because they have
okay.
white people have just as many ghetto-fied, ignorant people in their race as we have in our race.
Okay.
I did take a few notes, though, when we talked about, you know, everyone, a lot of the people that have called in were brought up in the 60s. I believe that's a cultural difference within our race. Those that
mm-hmm.
were brought up in the 60s, like myself, ran to celebrate that we had a job, and our young people today say that's not enough money. We celebrate when you were the first one to go to college in your family, where
mm-hmm.
in some parts of our race, that's not even discussed. I think that what I get tired of, as far as like when I'm looking at those questions, I wasn't surprised at all the scores that I had, because
were,
I look to the fact that we need, you know, we always say we need to do this. Well, I don't say we need to. I say I need to.
I
took it upon myself to find Lou Gamble. I looked it up on the internet. I picked up the phone and talked to Lou and said, what's this about? And I contribute my money monthly. I feel that all races, but more so ours, that I need to be replaced with the we. And if we get enough enough eyes, then we'll be able to move the needle. And then the last thing I want to say is that I appreciate the young man from Cincinnati. I'm from Cincinnati, too, originally, saying that he tells his kids. He doesn't necessarily say it's wrong, but he tells them what's right. And with the Internet being so accessible, I just don't understand how we don't know more about ourselves. I know You know, I have a family that's rainbow. Every race is in my family. My grandma in the early 1900s was blind and had her own ice cream parlor. Her sister would travel back and forth to Paris. My mom is of Irish and English descent. And so I have a rainbow. I could go into all my family, and it looked like the United Nations when we sit down. But there's one thing that's been prominent, and that is that it's about I. It's about what I am going to do, not what we are going to do.
Personal responsibility.
Personal responsibility and accountability when it's not working. Okay, don't pick up the phone and ask mom for $5. Be accountable on why you don't have that $5, and don't make that mistake again. That's all I got to say. Bye.
Thank you. Very powerful.
Thank you so much, sister. All right. And Brother Leon. Brother Leon.
I'm glad. Can you hear me?
Yes, brother.
Well, I enjoyed the call. So far, I got that to the first question about a can of Black America do what it took 18 years for previous generations. That's something that I believe we can do, and I believe that can be done highly. The questions I did fairly decent. I did about an average on of nines. I was doing real good until I got to the part about the infancy. I just came out of the divorce, so I was a little prejudiced, but I understand. I had to wrestle with it, but I love my Black women, so it wasn't an issue. Just that was something that was kind of on me a little bit. Coming from the question, like my race, okay, I believe 100% in my race and doing business because I recognize where we're coming from. So I'm always not looking at what they do. I try to see the good, and I be watchful, you know, how I spend my money, how I work with people. But at the same time, I'm always looking for the good because I understand why we do what we do. And then spending money, I'm always, like the brother said, I cross country to go to a Black place. And like I said, it's quality service. I'm old school. If the food is good, you got me. You can just have me swinging from the window. I'm just old school. So some of the places I go, there's one of the places the guy, he be talking. He's the one person ever. He got like his own restaurant. He does the cooking, everything. And he talk crazy, but the food is excellent. So I go there, and it's a vibe that I receive just from being, because everybody come there knowing the food is good, know he's going to talk crazy, but it's a vibe. So I would go with that. And financial investment, well, unfortunately, we have younger members in the family that are bankers that got educated and try to help the family in those areas. And I say this to them. Like they say that one about my wife, it was, I'm working with that one, okay? It was a hard divorce. Well, hey, I love the Black women now, but I'm working with them, okay? Okay, and then I say education, again, by me being the oldest in our family, where we teach all of Black history and Black culture, we do a lot of research ourselves, and I'm the oldest of seven, we real heavy on teaching the young, you know, the truth, okay? And that's something we've been doing for a long period of time, okay? And then I say for knowledge of the history, we might give ourselves about a B-plus on being knowledge of the history. So the biggest thing I was looking at is that question at the beginning, can a modern Black American do what 18 years of previous generation failed to do? I believe we can do that. And I believe God's going to bless us with the energy and the knowledge to have a quick change. And that's it, Brother Luke.
All right, thank you so much.
Very inspirational, brother.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. All right. And you just left a few moments for Sister Mai. Hold on. Sister Mai?
Hi, thank you. Real quick, I just wanted to, and one of the sisters actually kind of said it, but to sum it up say that even though I scored low on certain things and it seemed like trust was an issue, I believe that I've learned that all cultures cheat, lie, steal. And in my experience, I found that white people are actually worse at all of it. They commit more crime and do more heinous acts than I've ever seen any Black people to do in terms of blessing people Black with my money and financial advice. I use Black people all the time for all of my services in that way when I can and take advice from knowledgeable Black people in that area, in the area of investments. And like males, one person mentioned that the other cultures, like Chinese people, are rude. It's just part of their culture. They've learned, however, to have customer service. They might be rude to each other and sometimes rude to us if you're in their environment. But if they are integrated or they're in an area where they're dealing with other places, they can pretend to be extremely kind just to give you that good customer service to keep you coming back.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception, I think, of nail salons. For the most part, I really wish we had black nail salons around because I can't stand when they start talking in their own language that they know you don't understand, and I believe that they're really talking mess about you. But, you know, a lot of people have bad experiences with black owned businesses, and they throw the bag, like I say, throw the bag out with the bathwater, whereas if you have a bad experience with, say, a white restaurant, the food's bad, you don't never go to another white restaurant, you know, or it was cold or it was slow. But a lot of people I find will say that or do that when it's a black business. They'll give them one chance, and if it was bad, they'll say, see, this is why I don't go to black businesses or whatever, you know, and as opposed to giving them another chance or going to just a different, you know, restaurant or establishment that has the same service, but it's still black-owned. I think someone else said it too, basically are harder on each other and hold each other to higher standards, and I think that's something we definitely need to change. And I'll leave this quote that I heard the other day on a different call. Somebody actually, it was actually a post that they were citing, and they said, I went to a black-owned establishment, and I had poor service. Very poor service, but I will go back again and again until we get it right. And I love that because I felt like that's the attitude we all need to have. And oftentimes it's on both sides. It is on both sides. It may be that they have a bad day or whatever, something's going on, you know, with them or that server or you know, or whatever, but it also might be you. You might also, you know, have a bad day or you might have a chip on your shoulder for whatever reason. So I really love that, and I just thought that was a good thing to end it with, to say that, you know, I've had a bad experience, but I'm going to try and try again until we get it right. So thank you for taking me again.
Awesome. Okay, sister. All right. So, Brother George, you want to summarize, you know, basically let us know what's going on. Are we crazy or what? I think everyone here is the exception. The reason being, right, so we are part of this organization. Aside from Sister Mai and Brother Leonard, who are, you know, together, I think no one else really knows anyone, right? And so we all coming together, and that's stepping out on faith and taking and that's trust. So I'm really not surprised that many of us skewed high on the trust. On the trust level. So just briefly, I'll just take a few minutes, you know, me, you know, in terms of trusting my race over others, yeah, I do, but I think to a fault, right? So I'm naive. And then, you know, I kind of live by that adage, you know, give them a rope or give them a little rope. And if they hang themselves, then my father always taught me, hey, listen, you probably just bought that person off or got them out of your life for whatever little bit of money that was or whatever that little situation is. In terms of me spending 50% of my income supporting my own, no, I do not spend 50% of my income because of where I live now. But when I was in Brooklyn, then, yeah, I've spent more than 50% because there were a lot of black businesses there. In terms of do I receive better quality? No, but we all know, right? So, you know, our people, they have attitudes and there's customer service issues. But when you live in, like, some of those environments and that's what you do, you kind of know how to operate with that, right? You know how to deal with that. You know how to, like, flirt with the server, flirt with the girl to get, like, extra stuff. And, you know how to deal with some of the sassy attitude and stuff. In terms of financial management and investment direction, I was, like, a no on that. I was scoring very low. And the reason why is because where I come from, and it's been my experience, black folks are secretive about money. They're secretive about how they make money and, you know, and giving people the details and the ins and outs. When I had some money that I wanted to invest, I couldn't turn to anyone, you know, in my family or, you know, any immediate black person that would actually tell me the steps that I needed to take
everyone was really secretive about it. And then my mother even told me, hey, don't let people know you have this type of money. You know, do I view members of my own race as the best potential? That's right. I'm only in the black women. You know, maybe, you know, if she's Spanish, but she's dark and she has a black person or something. But I've never personally had one. But that's like the only thing that I would probably entertain. Do I receive academic education? No, I do not receive anything, any education. I have not, because of where I've grown up. I grew up, I guess, when they started with that affirmative action integration with the schools, and I actually went to some pretty good schools, even though I lived in the hood. The schools changed because right on the other side of town, we had white people, and they, you know, they smashed us all in. My children, yeah, I try to, so where I live now, it's a predominant, you know, my actual community, a lot of black folks moving in now, but the overall area is a predominantly white area, middle class area, and I try to give my children that cultural experience as much as possible, and I even still take them to the hood so they can, you know, keep their finger on the pulse of see where they came from and all of that other stuff. And am I knowledgeable on my culture, historic achievements to the country's growth? Yes, I am. Specifically, our contributions to pop culture, to music, to the arts, and all of those things, our slang and all of that stuff, I'm acutely aware of all of that. So I was at SKU 10. And so basically, I think that's everyone who wanted to weigh in, Brother George, and I will allow you to summarize.
Okay. All right. So at the bottom of the – thanks for sharing that with us, Lou. That was really appreciated. At the bottom of the member engagement series handout download that you have, there are three goals that are listed, and they're there specifically because that really, I want that to be at the forefront of everything we discussed today and everything that we continue to discuss from this point on. For the purpose of commitment to membership dues toward the goal of 1 million members, group alignment with Black Wallet Matters vision for developing a strong economic base in our community, and third, to increase self-awareness of any of our negative thought process / emotions that may impact how we treat and support each other in business and economics. So that is really the purpose of this type of team building exercise, because we are all entering into an economic relationship. Those are two separate words, economic and relationship. And so to do that, the more we learn and address with each other, the stronger we can become towards taking on this really challenging task that Brother Lewis set before us. The next area that I'd like you to notice, you probably have noticed in the discussion, is patterns have developed in people's experiences. We have patterns of trust. We have patterns of poor customer service. We have patterns of educational experiences with regard to them not being culturally relevant. And these are areas that when we continue, when we move forward in our experience with each other and experiences with the organization, we want to be heightened about experiences we've had before, because things can happen now to where we can get triggered and have that familiar feeling. I've been here before. And it's a challenge. So me as a mental health professional, I have to daily check myself. I have to be aware that I have lived the black male experience, and every day there are systemic messages coming at me that are telling me negative things with regard to my personhood and my community. So in closing, the process that we went through here is aimed primarily at a qualitative process. Many of us, society is built on what you can touch, what you can see, what grade did I get, what does that get me? And what that ends up doing is it makes us
step to other people's tune, so to speak, versus following our internal drive, what's authentic to us. So the experiences that you all just expressed, it isn't about trying to determine are you crazy or are you nuts. Actually, because of your experiences and you survived them, that probably makes you a very stable genius. Okay, nobody laughs on that.
No, everyone's on mute, but I'm sure they're laughing. Yeah, everyone's on mute, but I'm sure there's people definitely laughing behind that one. But go ahead.
What I would like to note, Brother Leonard brought out a really important point about this, and I was so glad that he recognized this. He started off saying that this felt like a therapeutic process, which that was really a compliment, because that's the purpose of this. Not because I believe our community is diagnosably out of sorts, but we have all generationally been through some mentally traumatic experience and are still going through. So to have a process where we can communicate, find that group of like minds, be able to share our experiences without fear of judgment and criticism, that is a very therapeutic environment to be in. And what's even better is when you can come together with a group of people and it becomes economically viable. So there's nothing like great conversation leading to economic participation, collaboration, and growth. And so that's really basically my intent for this exercise. I hope that you all felt this was a worthwhile exercise. I'm sure we'll get some feedback over the next few days. Brother Lou, I really appreciate his willingness to entertain this process. This is a total experiment. But I really feel like in order to capitalize on the goals for Black Wallets Matter, before we start trying to fix the outside, we've got to deal with the inside. And that's what this process does. So thanks for humoring me with this exercise, and I look forward to your feedback.
Okay. So again, before we go, everyone, on that sheet, like I said, the Brother Georgie has written a book. It's called Black. It's called,
Black? The acronym is?
Right. Black, yeah. Limiting. Right. Got it, brother.
Yeah, Black Beliefs.
Limiting authentic cultural knowledge.
Authentic cultural knowledge. And this exercise is one of the exercises that come out of that book. So the book is really, it's meant to be an action book, not just a book you get to sit down and read, drink a cup of coffee, and chill out. This book is meant to challenge you, just like what we went through here. And my goal is for every Black household to have this book. It's a resource where you can start dealing with identity, perception, stress, distrust issues, all those things. So that's the purpose of it.
All right. Yeah, so let's show some support to the brother. Click that link on the side, and you can purchase the book from Amazon. Real quick, Brother Dwayne, we're going to end the call, so please be brief, brother. What's going on, Brother Dwayne?
All right, so how do we network amongst each other? I haven't discovered that.
Oh, okay. So we have a Facebook group there, but what's happened is Facebook keeps changing the algorithm, so you'll post and it probably won't go to anyone, or maybe it'll go to one or two people. So that's kind of been a challenge. So I'm looking at, I want to put like a communication, like a forum within the website, but I don't want it to be complicated where, you know, I have people calling me with customer support problems because they don't know how to use, you know, some kind of proprietary type of software or whatever. So I'll figure that out going forward, though. I'm trying to look for a real simple solution. All right.
How do you think LinkedIn would be for what we're doing?
It's not going to – first of all of those external platforms are not really good because they limit the reach, right? So you'll think that you're posting something that's supposed to go to everyone, and it really won't reach everyone, because that's how we attempted to have people communicate for the ambassadorship program.
But I'll let me find something. I want to find something that looks and functions like Facebook, because most people are familiar with that. And try to integrate that. I don't want to do something that people are unfamiliar with, because I know I'll just start getting a bunch of calls with people asking me, hey, what about this? And I don't want to deal with software problems. All right. So I'll take it. I'm sorry.
And another question: how do when are we going to get to discussing setting up chapters?
So there's two other brothers that are going to take the lead on that, Brother Cujo and Brother Will. They are going to deal with that. So it's probably on our next members call. We'll talk about the chapters, because we actually have to restructure. So although there's the ambassadorship guidelines, that hasn't really been as successful as we had hoped. And so that's what these calls on this day is supposed to. We need like leadership training first, because although people are excited and open about doing the ambassadorship program and starting the chapters, a lot of people they just don't have like the mindset. And we as a collective, we really don't have that cohesive gel to start working and organizing. And so we want to make sure that we have that. Because we've had a few people, we've had a few missteps along the way, and it's become more of a challenge just trying to keep those things together as opposed to actually making progress. So there was no progress made is essentially what I'm saying.
All right, so we're not on the recruitment tip right now?
In terms of recruiting, you mean recruiting people locally, or you mean recruiting people?
Yeah, locally.
No, just hold off until we have our next meeting. So don't worry about forming a chapter. If you want to tell, if you know someone locally and they would be interested in an organization on the national level, then that's fine. But in terms of trying to formulate a chapter where you are, hold off on that until Brothers Cujo and Brother Will are coming on, because they're going to be handling that going forward, and they have some ideas that may be a little bit different than what's outlined in the ambassadorship program. And they would be the point people that you would talk to about that.
Because I got recruited.
Okay, well, okay, cool. That's good. All right, brother. Thank you so much. You can also just like reach out to me, right? So you can just call, like tomorrow or something, and then any other direct questions that you have, you can just, you can direct those to me. All right.
That's the background. That's the background I come from, recruiting. That's how I build business.
All right, just give me a call and we can talk
about it. Yeah, I will.
All right, brother.
I would like to reiterate quickly to encourage you all to please send your feedback to Brother Lou, the pros, the cons, what you like, what you didn't like, what could be better, all those types of things.
Okay, yep, absolutely. Yep, just hit reply to the email and just let me know. Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. I appreciate you hanging out. This was a great call, our most lively members call ever. So I want to thank everyone who participated, and good night.
You still there, brother?
Didn't you have the red one?
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.